Hello, and welcome to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. I'm Nita. Today on the show, we'll be listening to Dr. Marimba Annie on her groundbreaking book, Yorobo, an African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior. Dr. Marimba Annie spoke to Listerveld Middleton about the book on the show For the People in 1994. In this first part, Dr. Annie explains the origin of the title of the book, Yorogo.
Yorogo comes from a Dogon mythology, small group of African people whom Europeans would consider primitive, unquote, who have a most complex cosmology. And in it, they talk about Ama, the creator, having created all beings with twin souls, the male and female part, and that represents the whole being. Yorogo was a being that tore himself away from the process of gestation, process of being born, so to speak, early, before Ama was finished creating. Because he wanted, in his arrogance, he wanted to compete with the creator, with Ama, and create a better universe, a better an earth, actually, than Ama could create. When he came down from the heavens, came to begin the process of creation, he found that everything that he created was incomplete, that indeed he could not create perfection or anything with life, because he himself was incomplete. Mm-hmm. He then realized that he was missing a part of himself, so he goes back to Ama to get his female part so that he could be whole. Ama had given that twin soul, that female part, away, so that Yorogo was in the state of searching for this other part of himself that would make him whole, and never being able to find it, so that he was forever incomplete, could only create destruction, actually, could only destroy, and could never be fulfilled. That, to me, was a statement of what I saw in the nature of European cultural thought and behavior. What I see is that in the development of European culture, which is an ongoing process, in the fulfillment of the Asili, that there are certain seminal points, seminal thinkers, doers, who at whatever point in history they were at, served a role of solidifying and further developing the definition of what it means to be European. Plato comes along and he uses the concept of truth, what would be called an epistemology, that's only the concept of truth, uses that as something around which people can come together and identify and say, okay, this is going to be us. Now, as I said, that didn't happen right away. He had to fight all these other people that would be dissonant, you know, voices. But eventually, yes, that became what Europeans identified with. They said, this way of thinking, this rationalism, this extreme rationalism that helps us to control, it gives us the illusion that we are controlling the future, the past, the universe, and everything. This is us as European people. So he was key at that point. Now, then you get a little later stage, here comes along, let's look at 312, what they call AD. Here comes Constantine. What does he do? He sees that what you need is a religious statement which will help to achieve this world domination, this power, help to bring these Europeans together so that they can have power over others. So he adopts Christianity. You see? And that gives him the model that he needs in order to say, we have the right, in fact, we have the mandate. He said he personally had the mandate, and you need to look at his own quotes and the things that were written about him, to go throughout the world and in the name of this one true God, which was them, which was the Europeans, to make everybody into these Christians.
Next, Dr. Annie explains why she wrote the book and what it is about.
There's a personal reason at the point that I was at when I began graduate studies. I saw us as African people always being put into a position when we would be in European or white academic institutions of being used to study our communities so that they can then use the information to control us. And I said that I would not be put into that position, and decided that as I was being taught European anthropology, I said, let me use some of this and see if I can turn it around and indeed study them and put them under the microscope. And that was the beginning of this process. I think the ideological reason, the political reason, most definitely was that Europeans have been very good at masking their intentions and their posture towards African people and other non-European people. And we have not understood what their purposes are, their intent towards us, have not understood their behavior. And I felt that this kind of study could help to unmask what in reality is the nature of the European. It's about how European culture works as a consistent machine for the achievement of European power and total control of the universe. One of the things that they do, I think, that is very damaging is the way in which they, how should I put it, train our children in schools to act against themselves and their people, to deny the aspects of themselves that really indeed are their strengths. We, of course, have experienced that, have been conditioned in this way, and it affects every single one of us. What you call the working Africans may be in a better position to begin to understand the kinds of things that I'm pointing to. It is the people who have been so indoctrinated within the academies that find it more difficult to critique, because the academy, since the time of Plato, back in 600, 700, 500 actually, years before the Common Era, the academy is the place that has been used to despiritualize the universe, has been used to promote a conception of truth that has no spirit in it. And we as an African people are a spiritual people. So that what it does is, these institutions do, is to take us away from ourselves. So the more time you spend in them, the more you are convinced that of this European reality, which is not a real reality, is not a reality for African people. I think that we have to focus on young people, young African people who have not been so conditioned with a way of thinking that supports European imperialism, European power, that they still have the ability to use their intuition, their spirituality, their Africanness to create. to think beyond the limitations that have been given to them in European academies. I think most of us as adults, as elders, have been so conditioned that we're afraid to move beyond the parameters that have been defined by our enemies in our thinking, so that our vision is limited. And so we are really not the people who should be conceptualizing the plans, you know, the movements, what we should be building. But I focus on the younger people who hopefully are still more in touch with what is natural to African people. And if I can affirm that in them, they will see the urgency. I find that in my teaching. I find that in teaching young people, that once they are affirmed and introduced in a conscious way to the African worldview, it becomes crystal clear to them. And they see an urgency in us as African people building for self, as opposed to imitating forms which have been put in place to make sure that we continue to be oppressed.
You're listening to Accent of Women, produced in the studios of 3CR in Unceded Norm and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. We're listening to Marimba Ani speaking about her book, Urugu, an African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior. Next, Dr. Marimba Ani talks about the concept of objectivity as a hallmark of European philosophical thought.
The concept of objectivity itself is something that has been used by Europeans to control African people. It is a concept which says that we can contemplate truth without being connected to any culture, without being, without coming from any perspective, without having any political implications in what we do. That, of course, is not the case. And what we did was to accept this and say that, oh, they're scientists, they're scholars, and so forth, were describing us objectively. What they were doing was promoting a particular way of viewing the world, promoting a particular political interest in the world. I do not make that claim, because that claim, it would be a lie. And it is always a lie when, you know, you open up a book and somebody says, well, I'm being objective in doing this. How can you be objective? You are a human being. You're part of a culture. Your people have had an historical relationship to other people. For any African person to say that they are being objective about Europe would be to say that they were being apolitical, non-political. We need to get away from that. So this is a very political work. It is meant to be.
In this next section, Dr. Ani speaks about the concept of Maafa.
I think that we have to look back at a period that I call the Maafa. We as Africans were very consciously stripped of our culture. Now, that becomes a platitude. You know, everybody's saying that. Stripped of our culture, but we have to see that we had a strong culture and so forth. But nobody seems to realize the depth of what that means. Being stripped of our culture meant being conditioned to accept ourselves as inferior beings. Okay? It meant that we were conditioned to feel that we had to be dependent on Europeans, dependent on white people, that we could not do things for ourselves and in our own image. That conditioning began with a long period of terrorism, which was very physical, you know, physically manifested. At the same time, there was the breaking of the will. So there was cultural violence, I call it, you know, in the book, as well as the physical violence, which was very important. We then came to a period in which we mistakenly thought we were free. We're now at a point where we think that we have freedom, the ability to be whatever it is that we can be within this society and so forth. Yet what happens is that we are still thinking within a modality that has been determined by those who would oppress us, those who would control us. And we don't see beyond that. So the question for me becomes, who controls how you think? We have the ability to create our own structures, our own theories, our own definitions of reality. To look at the African worldview, to look at, for instance, the Dogon people, to look at the Kemetic people, to look at our own people who have, even look at Carter G. Woodson, for instance, the miseducation of the Negro, which I don't think was really ever understood by us, and to use these things as inspirations for the building of institutions, the creation of things, the building our own buildings. We have the ability to do that. So it's almost like we've been conditioned so well through such a long process that now it is us who are enslaving ourselves mentally. It would be so easy, in one sense, for us to undo it. That's what I'm saying in this book. Because the way the system of European control works is that you have to accept a concept of reality which makes them superior. If you deny that, their thing will not work, and they will lose their control. So that they put all of this energy into establishing this system that begins when you're 3, 4, and so forth, which defines reality in such a way where there's no spirit, because they aren't a spiritual people, you see, which talks about this objective truth and so forth, which says that African spirituality represents backwardness, so you need to move away from it. It does all of these things which make you as an African person, me as an African person, us, distrust the very part of ourselves which is our strength. I think that there is a lot that is being done within the movement of African-centered education in that regard. In terms of, I think we have more information now that we've ever had before. And I have seen the effect of that information. That is very important, that people do begin to realize and understand, first of all, how young Europe is in relationship to Africa, and what we were putting into place, creating, building, conceiving of long before Europe existed. When you open people's minds to that, it can have a lot of power. Mm-hmm. So that I think that generally we have not understood that. But we have an opportunity to do so because of the work of many people now that is building on work that was done before that we didn't know about.
In this section, Dr. Marimba Annie speaks about the process of writing the book and some of the key concepts contained within the book.
Said to myself that, and this definitely was with the help of the ancestors, I want to affirm that, by the way. That's important because of our concept of connectedness, our concept of the universe, that it's not just words to talk of a spiritual universe and our spirituality as a people, but we've got to understand where our energy comes from. And I know that that's where mine came from. So this is ours. This belongs to us. I had to say, how would I approach studying the European given African conceptions? You see, it's one thing to say, okay, I want to do this, but then use their conceptions. What does it mean for us to really think in African terms? And so what I did was to develop concepts that came from an African worldview, not a European worldview. And I came up with the concept of Asili. I also used an African language. That's a Kiswahili word that means seed, origin, the essence of something. The reason that was important was because what people would say is, and they will say, oh, Europe is so vast. It is, there are so many different kinds of European forms and different countries. How can you talk about Europe as a whole? Now, of course, they've been talking about Europe as a whole all of this time, but when we begin to look at them, suddenly it's going to be, no, you can't really do this because it's too diverse. I needed a concept which could explain a culture in terms of its core, in terms of its ideological core, so that you could look at every different aspect of the culture and see how it fit into this one seed or core. And that's why I used the Asili. And the idea of the seed was that once that Asili is in place, that cultural Asili, that it will seek to fulfill itself. So the way in which the culture will develop will all be feeding into that Asili. Mm-hmm. And that would help me to get at consistency in terms of European development. What throws us as a people is that we make exceptions. You know, we say, oh, well, that's different over here, and that's different. This is a good one over here, and this doesn't really work that way. But in my analysis, it's all consistent, and it's all working for one purpose. And the concept of Asili helped me to see that. And that is, that comes to the answer to your question, is that what I was able to do was to see that the nature of the European Asili was to seek power. That it, in essence, is, we could almost say it is an Asili which lacks wholeness, and therefore must always see. Go back to Yorugu now. Remember Yorugu as the incomplete being that is always must be seeking, but can never be fulfilled because he can't get the complementary part of himself. Their Asili, the European cultural Asili, is incomplete, must always be seeking. Now, it cannot be fulfilled through spirit because they have no knowledge of spirit, no relationship to spiritual reality. Therefore, fulfillment is sought through power. And power here means power over other. And what that means is that everything within the culture, all of the development of European culture, all of the forms, all of the institutions, the ideas even, are all for the purpose of achieving European power. Now, your question was, if we can recognize that there have been imperialistic behaviors in other cultures, then what is the difference between European culture and these other cultures? And the answer is that Europeans have been most successful at achieving world domination because everything within the culture supports the quest for domination. Everything, mm-hmm. including, and most importantly to me, their philosophical concepts, including their concept of truth, including their academies, academia, the intellectuals, including that. It works for, including Christianity as it manifests itself, you know, within the European development. All of that works for the achievement of European power. Even to understand the nature of European culture, and how it works, what we need to begin with is the African worldview and how it works. That provides a frame of reference that you can then use. The African concept of the universe is as a spiritual whole, where everything is interrelated. That means that what is emphasized is not only spirit, but connectedness. And that we conceive of ourselves, we experience ourselves, I should say, as spiritual beings, that as almost as cosmic beings, and by that I mean that we are connected to nature, to the forces of nature, to each other, in such a way that that's where we get definition and that's where we get strength. And so power for us becomes energy, the energy to do, to make things happen. We energize each other. Interaction becomes important. Complementarity becomes important. The relationship between spirit and matter is one in which they are connected, where material reality is understood as just the way spirit manifests itself. That's simply. On the other hand, in the European worldview and way of thinking, way of looking at the universe, human beings become separate and distinct individuals. The only way that you can know anything about the universe is to separate yourself from it, to take connectedness out of it, and thereby create what they call the object. That's all that you can know. Now, this object is a thing that has no feeling, no meaning, no spirit. Okay, that's an illusion in their minds, but it works for them because what Plato did, if we can go back to Plato, is that if he could get people to agree that this was the only truth, then what he could do is say that, well, the people who were closest to that truth, those are the people who should rule all the other people. So that worked within their culture. It gave him the basis for a hierarchy within Europe.
And that's all we've got time for today. We just heard Dr. Marimba Ani speaking about her book, Urugu, an African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior, on the show For the People in 1994. Special thanks to For the People for this episode. Accent of Women is produced in the NAM studios of Community Radio 3CR with the financial assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Music for Accent of Women was written and produced by George Kanjere. Thanks for tuning into the program. I'm Nita, and I look forward to your company again next week.